You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Back for one more year. Isn't that right, Spike? Always last 25 years. Back for one more year.
I'm still in a temporary at-will contract, yeah.
Yeah.
If I got to get my tackles up, buddy, I got to seal that edge, man, you know?
Yeah, the radio business is tough like that. You're one more year, going to option you for one more year. So, Spike, before we get into talking about the Ship Canal Bridge, maybe we should just talk about this really quick. The shooting in Nashville, still a lot of information coming in about it. Very sad, but I didn't want to just kind of blow right past it. Do you know what I mean, Spike?
Because
I at this point, Spike, I just think to myself, how many times have we had the same kind of debates on air about it, and they don't really go anywhere. You know, at this point in time in my radio career, I don't want to argue about guns. I don't want to argue about mental health. What I really want to do is just focus on the families, focus on the kids, more information. And then if we want to, you know, yell at each other and argue about guns or mental health 3 days from now, Spike, I'm your man. You know what I mean? If you want to debate about it, I'm all there. But for right now, maybe it's just my new philosophy when I think about these things and when I talk about these things. For right now, I just want to center the victims of tragedy rather than having the way that I feel about the Second Amendment or the way that I feel about mental health in this country be at the forefront of people's minds. I'd rather have people be thinking about the kids and the people who were killed today.
I'm heartsick as well, my friend.
Yeah.
I mean, And I mentioned you guys last week after one of our shows with that shooting in Denver of a student who was going through his daily pat down because of his, I don't even want to say behavioral issues, his violence issues on prior occasions. And so this kid, every day when he came to school, had to be subjected to a physical search as part of his agreement with the administration to be able to allow to go to school. And there was a shooting and it never even broke our radar.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to that incident, but there's just so many. And I'm with you. I'm heartsick. I want to think about the families involved and the community involved. And every kid in that classroom today and countless other classrooms across this country who are going to be living with this for literally the rest of their life. I mean, I've had horrible moments in my life where my bike wheel fell off and I slid down the street in a pair of shorts and flip-flops. and I don't mean to make light, but that,
no, I understand
that
what
kind
you're
of
saying.
Horrific thing is still a part of my life today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm seeing a kid, a friend of mine, get hit by a car on his bicycle is with me today. These are people that are be broken. And I'm trying not to cry. You know,
people will be
hurt for the rest of their lives. And I care and I want to think about them. I'm with you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my advice to everybody today is to avoid Twitter, because if you want to see people saying on both sides of the argument, by the way, you have lefties saying awful things and then you have people on the right who are also saying awful things. What's weird to me is when these things occur, I think that people want, because it affects people, and so they react. They want to do. My buddy Billy Sunshine is the best example of this kind of thing. Whenever a shooting happens or a murder happens, he reacts and he gets very upset and he makes death threats to people and he starts saying that the Republicans don't care about kids, so on and so forth. And I think what's important is as we mature as human beings is to realize that when you are a reactionary, that tends to be a bad thing. And that what we should be doing first and foremost when something happens is slowing down and processing it rather than you jumping to some kind of immediacy or what are we going to do now? Da, 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 da.
Right.
Because that doesn't help anybody, right? I mean, we would do that in no other place in your life. You lose your job. You know, you might want to take a couple days off to think about it. You don't immediately go down to the dollar store and say, hire me now. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
There's a certain amount of space that just human beings need. And unfortunately, now we live in this era of immediacy where people want answers now and they want you and I to be a conduit for whatever rage mechanism they have, whether they're pro-gun or anti-gun or, you know, whatever it is. And I just am not willing to do that anymore. I'm not willing to be the guy who's like, the Second Amendment is the most sacred. But I'm just not going to do it. Not today. Maybe a couple days from now, Spike, you and I can go to fisticuffs and, you know, Chris can cry and Andrew can cry and say, you guys stop fighting. But just not today.
I think our decision to go to balloon swords and Nerf guns was a smart move from a from an HR standpoint here at Cairo.
I agree. And speaking of, by the way, here in our region, the Ship Canal Bridge finally being cleaned up. And boy, howdy, Spike, when you look at the images of that encampment, that looks like I've seen images of the slums that they have in India. You know,
I've walked through the slums of Mumbai.
Wow.
And Bangladesh, and Dhaka, Bangladesh. Yes.
When you actually get into the camp itself, because most people, like myself, you see it from, I don't know, how far away would you say that is? Like 20 some odd yards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. About that.
So, but when you actually get in there and you see, it almost looks like the backyard in the sand lot where the big dog is.
Oh, remember? Yeah, where Hercules lived. Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So it is really, really bad, and today it is being cleaned up. And one of the things that I found really promising about the story is that all of the people who were there that were offered housing took housing. This is a good sign, yes?
It is. It's a very good sign. And I'm, again, with the heartbreak, it's the theme today. The fact that these folks, I know they have nothing, but they've lost everything.
Yeah.
You know, and because they couldn't just do what was asked to find one of the many other options available to them, their unwillingness to give up the ghost because there was this sense of, you know, you move us, we'll be back. You move us, we'll be back. That's what they've been shown. And I don't mean to dehumanize them in any way, shape, or form. But it wasn't a tenable situation. It was not going to be able to be allowed to happen. They had been given ample warnings. The governor did a press conference there last week. I mean, if you know nothing else about civics, when the governor shows up with cameras, something's about to get done.
Yeah.
And then the bulldozers coming through. And I know that there are folks who have nothing, but now they've gotten less than nothing now. And the best option is still the one that was offered weeks ago, months ago. Encampments ago to these same folks. And, you know, what can they do to keep from coming back? I mean, hard fencing, not just wire fencing.
You're going to have both better fencing and barricades. And did I ever tell you about when Drew Pinsky tried to do this down in L.A. four or five, maybe longer, maybe about 8 years ago? Did I tell you? Okay, so Drew Pinsky.
That's Dr. Drew, right?
Dr. Drew from Loveline. So he teams up with the government in Los Angeles to try to do a housing first initiative for a lot of the more desperate homeless people that were living in Los Angeles. And we're talking people that needed to be put into housing immediately. And what he found, I've listened to this podcast so many times, him talking about it, because it really is an interesting window into that world. They would go up to these people who needed housing, and he said and they would have pictures, and they would have resources for them, and a schedule, and yes, you can bring your pets, so on and so forth. It took on average 6 times for these people to agree to go to even look at the housing. And part of the reason that they had such a hard time with it is because all of their friends and everything that they knew was in these encampments.
Right.
And so they said openly, the people that they offered these programs to in Los Angeles, they said, I don't know if I'm going to stay here for 2 weeks. I don't know if it'll be a month. If I get lonely, I'm just going to go back out there. So what you find with a lot of these people is they're looking for a sense of community.
Yeah,
and when you've been kind of ostracized by the rest of society because of your mental illness or your drug addiction or whatever it is, anybody would do this. You're going to go and you're going to try and find people to form a community with. And then when you separate that community, I mean, you're going to get lonely, right? You're going to feel kind of separated from people that you could previously hang out with and party with and, you know, take care of each other is another aspect of this that I want to throw in there, right?
Well, that's the most basest of human instinct we have is to cluster.
Yeah.
Is to build a community for self-survival. How can you blame these folks for having that sentiment about not wanting to leave my friends behind? Or, you know, move them all together or don't move them at all, I guess, is the way to keep that from happening in the future. Why don't we take this space, which is, I've said this jokingly, it is prime real estate for homeless encampments. It's covered. It's sheltered.
What are you talking about?
The First Avenue South Bridge, what was cleared out today.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we've talked last week about a church parking lot that was being made into a car camping area. So let's put mini houses there. You know, let's put a community there that the school is it's not right across the street. It's a block away. It is close. I understand that. let's make one of these mini communities, little house communities.
Well, you know, Spike,
that people can be regulated as they go in and have standards to stay there.
Yeah, I will say this. I'm going to offer you the counter argument really quick. About, I want to say it's like a probably two blocks over, two blocks down from my house. There's a little housing. I forget the acronym they have for it, but it's basically an old. It's like an old community center. It's like an old boys and girls club, basically, okay. That has been converted into apartments for people on SSI or SSDI. It's like low income housing.
Gotcha. Section 8 kind of, yeah.
Kind of, but it's they have a front desk lady, okay. And they have like mental health services on site for these people, and there's a bus to take them around, and so there's that kind of thing. But recently, over the last like 6 months, there has been a growing cadre of ne'er-do-wells who are hanging out in the parking lot and hanging out directly in front of it. And they're selling drugs and they're smoking meth and they're basically partying. And because of the leniency that this building has for that behavior, this isn't a neighborhood, Spike. This isn't like, you know, there are houses on either side of it. There are people who are moving. Because of the fights that are going on, right, and I was talking to one of my neighbors about this. He lives, I think, four or five houses down, and he's like, I got kids, man. I can't deal with this. The police aren't doing anything with it. So I guess my point is that if you want to have that kind of a thing, there has to be a strictness to it. There has to be a real – because I'm seeing the effect of lax policies happening in my neighborhood. And people can't put up with it anymore.
Nor should they have to if they've got kids going to school there. That's fair. I'm so utopian about how I want to see things work out for these people.
Right. But if, and here's the other crazy thing. They have a security guard who's there at that building. And what is he doing? He's on his phone. He sits in a lawn chair directly in front of the building and just hangs out under the eaves and just kind of hangs out on his phone.
Watching
the crime go by. Ugh. So there has to be a balance here, and it takes a strong will in order to effectuate that kind of a balance when we're talking about homelessness, especially when it's increasing, according to this new HUD report, right?
Yeah.
The number of Washingtonians who are unsheltered in vehicles in a temporary shelter grew by 10% from 2020 to 2022. I did see this thing, Spike. I wanted to tell you about this. We should have grabbed the audio, but it's an audio from Jonathan Cho, and it's a guy who's out in the street, and he's talking about how he can get away with anything. He can get away. He's not from the state. He's not from the region. He moved here, and he's committed dozens of crimes, and he is admitting to Jonathan Cho, he says, I could get away basically anything here. I can do whatever I want. I might go in for processing when I get arrested. I might be there for a couple hours, and then I get put right back out on the street. So... Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, that's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
I mean, and we get targeted because of the attempts at being humane, the attempts at being an inclusive society that cares for its least advantaged members. And for that, we're targeted. Just like the community you're talking about in your neighborhood, where here's a place put together with opportunity and assistance and support, and it's targeted by drug dealers and ne'er-do-wells just want to hang out there and party because there's an ample supply of customers who are hanging on by their fingernails. Right. Walking by on a daily basis.
Yeah. And also the other thing, the other reason why they do that, Spike, is because those dealers can blend in with the people who that housing is actually for. The people who are in the housing are severely disabled or, you know, they're pretty not doing so well. Let's put it nicely.
Right.
But the problem is that for whatever reason, this facility has decided to make their parking lot. And I'm not going to say the name of the facility, but for whatever reason, they've decided to make the parking lot basically a free-for-all for all this activity. And then when they do shoo the guys out of the parking lot, they all linger on the sidewalk directly in front of this place, which was built and is meant for people who cannot take care of themselves or who can barely take care of themselves. And these guys just kind of mingle and they can get away with whatever they want. So there has to be a change, and I believe that change is coming now, you know, with like and it's little things, right? Like cleaning up underneath the Ship Canal Bridge, right. arguing about the police pursuit bill. There are these little incremental changes that occur, and I think that slowly it's going to correct itself. It's kind of a relearning process that I think everybody's going to go through, and then we'll all be better for realizing that we made a terrible mistake.
Well, we slid step by step into this situation.
Yes.
We can't expect to make one giant leap out of it. That's not
right.
That's
and,
not realistic. Yeah,
and you see
right.
it. You see it all around the country. I mean, you see it in places like Chicago. You see it in places like New York. You see. I mean,
yeah.
all of these major metropolitan areas are now saying. Yeah, no, we actually really like the police. So
Yeah. No, that was a horrible marketing scheme, that defund thing. That was a really bad idea. We love you guys.
That was
every survey of low-income communities will tell you, hell no, don't get rid of the police.
Yeah.
It's bad enough here now with little police action we do have.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the more that we talk about it, and this is the way that this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, Spike. We talk about these issues, we analyze them from every angle that we can, whether it's a school shooting or homelessness or drug addiction or whatever it is. And that goes out into the ether. It goes out into people's minds, whether it's at the dinner table or you and I, you know, jaw-jacking at each other for 3 hours every day. And this is how change occurs. I have to believe this, otherwise I wouldn't do my job. You talk about it, you think about it, you talk about it again, people make mistakes, but eventually things tend to drift away from chaos because nobody wants to go back to that, right? And nobody wants to live in that space. We've fought for the last 200 years to get away from it, and so I think that now we're just seeing that correction yet again in contemporary society, my friend.
And with regard to jaw-jacking it back and forth between us for three hours, like, and more so than just us, it's been interesting for the last month, 6 weeks, to hear Matt Markovich down in Olympia and hear conversations and topics being discussed here at Cairo, and then hearing direct correlation to actions being taken in Olympia. Like folks are, and it's not that Olympia is hearing what we say, but maybe the folks listening to this radio station are reaching out to their representatives and saying, look, this is frustrating. This is bordering on ridiculous when a guy can drag an ATM down the street, but it's not covered in the things the cops can chase.
Right.
You know, when these kind of public, I don't want to say outcry, but when public involvement is raised, that's like you said, incrementally things will start to change back toward a direction where we all want them to be.
I know I'm a hero, Spike. I'm a hero. The things that I say from my mouth to God's ears, to Jay Inslee's ears. And
it's a short trip. It's a shorter trip than you think.
And I just want to thank myself for being, you know, the soul. What do you call me, Spike? You say it all the time. The soul of Seattle.
The soul of Seattle. Yeah. The soul of Seattle.
I want to thank myself and no one else. Not you. Not Chris, not Andrew, not Ryan Buckley.
No. We're just here to get you lunch.
Yeah, because I say it like how it is, Spike, and at the end of the day, people listen to me because I've got important things to say. Isn't that right?
Smart ones do. Right. Smart ones do.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back, I believe that the great and world-famous Ursula Royteen will be dropping by, and we will be discussing everything that I got wrong about the capital gains tax. Right? I mean,
well, I know that Ursula's coming in. I'm not sure if we're going to talk about that.
Okay,
but we can take a run at that. That'd be a really short break because you didn't get much wrong. You know.
All right. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Ursula Royteen coming up right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Middays. Joining us is the world-famous Ursula Royteen.
Hey, Jack.
How are you, Ursula?
It's been too long.
Yeah, no, it really has been. Yeah, no, I say that every time I get back on the air at Cairo. It says, been not long enough every time I do the show. So, Ursula, how you been? I heard you had Chris Reichdahl on to talk about the capital gain. Can I tell you really quick? I had more emails and Twitter bombs from my Friday show where we were talking about the capital gains tax. You would not believe how many people out there do not have $250,000 in stocks that they want to sell, but they are very upset at the idea that if they had $250,000 worth of stocks that they had to sell, that they might have to pay 7% graduated tax on it. You would not believe.
Because a lot of them were texting us, too, when we talked about it last week. And the reason is, and I think for a lot of people, the reason is because they think, well, you're starting at $250,000, but how long is it going to take before you start bringing down that number? And then it's going to affect me. So it's more the it's supposed to only affect 7,000 of the most wealthy people in the state of Washington. But they're figuring, hey, this is just a start. And because it's the idea of, are you calling this an excise tax or is this an income tax? And so the Supreme Court was able on this vote of 7-2. They said, no, this is an excise tax and therefore it is not a violation of the state constitution. But if you believe that this tax is an income tax, then you're just going to be against it because, I mean, if you're basically, if you feel that way and you want the Constitution to be upheld, then you will feel that way. But yeah, there's a lot of people who won't be affected. The other thing a lot of people thought was, hey, if I sell my house, well, this doesn't affect your property either.
Right, right.
So I think there's also, it's kind of complicated, but I think it's just the notion that so many people feel like they're taxed out already, and now we're going to add this one additional one, and what are you taking away so far? Nothing.
Right.
So I think that's why we're hearing from those people.
So Chris Reichdahl was talking about how that capital gains money will be spent. He's talking to you about it, and I hear tell it's going to a good cause if indeed it doesn't get voted away or, you know, there's not an initiative to try to get rid of it or whatever.
Yeah, so early education programs, other school programs. So in essence, what the state school superintendent told us is that this is a start. Right now, there are many districts in the state of Washington that just really don't have enough money.
Right.
We talked about one of them last week, the school district of Wakayakum down there in southwest Washington, where they're suing the state because even though voters rejected levies that would have raised money for school buildings, they're saying, wait a minute, our schools are supposed to be fully funded.
Right.
Education is supposed to be fully funded. And we've got kids who can't even go to school without freezing to death practically because they don't have heat. And then in the summer or in the spring, they don't
work.
Have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. So they're suing. So, you know, the feeling is that this will bring in some much needed money and will be taken from people who don't need that money so well, much.
Well,
I know that's arguable.
That's always, but to me, it's folks who are being paid in stocks and in bonds as compensation, as income.
Yes.
Which is why, see, that's why they're upset about it, because that's their income. But when they sell that, that's a loophole for them to avoid paying taxes.
Right,
they're being compensated not in salary as the rest of us are. When you get to a certain point of a certain type of career or type of occupation, you have the option of being paid in stocks and bonds.
Right.
And that's an upper echelon way to make a living anyway.
Call me crazy and call me, you know, I don't know. If I had $250,000 worth of stocks and I got taxed 7%, let's just say the tax was 7% on the $250,000 and it goes to schools. Call me crazy, but I'd be fine with it. You can call me crazy all day. I go, oh, it's going to schools? I like that. Okay, I'm fine with it. Cool. Thank you. That's what I would say. I don't understand. I get that people hate taxes. I understand it. I understand that people feel like there's been mismanagement going on. But if it's going to schools, I go, fine. I don't care. Fine.
And I think there are people who believe the way you do. And many conservatives would say the same thing. But they want to know, okay, so what is this money going toward? Or the other thing is, well, what have you been doing with the money we've been giving you? We're already,
that's very true.
You know, paying compared to many other states. We're paying a lot per student. That's one thing that I asked Chris Reichdahl about this morning. He said, well, we're actually getting a lot for the money that we are spending. And then, you know, relative to other states, there's other states that spend a lot more per student and don't have the same results that we do. So I understand, though, the notion of, okay, we're now it's another tax. And then we have the capital gains tax now. We've got sales tax. We've got one of the highest gas taxes. you know, and we just keep adding and adding.
We do.
And
they nickel and dime us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so one of the things that Gio was proposes is, okay, why don't we have a state income tax, which is, you know, considered much more fair and would make us not the most regressive or one of the most regressive states when it comes to our taxes.
Well, sales taxes usually disproportionately affect lower income families. So if you're going to add a state income tax, if you're going to take a look at the Constitution and correct it to have a state income tax, then lose the sales tax of 10.9, knock that down to 4%. And then have a 7% or whatever it is, state income tax to make more level the playing field. Because by the time we tack 10% on everything we buy, you know, that's your 7% or 6% sales tax right there. If you drop it to 4, that's 6% for everybody across the board.
Right. But have you heard of anyone in Olympia talking about reducing the sales tax?
Yeah. Oh, hell no.
Well, or getting rid of any tax for that matter?
Right. I'd like them to guarantee us that it won't, because most of the arguments I hear aren't about whether it's an excise tax or an income tax.
Yes.
Most of the arguments I hear, it's about the slippery slope.
Yes.
Well, now it's 250, but when's it going to be 200? When's it going to be 150?
Right.
When's going to be 100? When's going to be everything?
Right.
And if they can guarantee us, why don't they guarantee us that?
And this, well, exactly. But this ruling actually goes against the overall trend. I was just reading a Forbes article talking about how this was actually an outlier, this decision, because saying that it is
excise and not
excise. Exactly. So that it really is going against what the rest of the country is doing.
Interesting.
I think there's going to be lawsuits, and I think everyone's going to have to vote on it again. Or at least that's what I was reading from Rob McKenna.
There's
going to be a lot more fallout from this. I mean, think about it like this. If I'm upset about having to spend, you know, 7% on $250,000, I'm pretty sure I could get a pretty good lawyer, right, to represent
to class action you and your other 6,999 families.
So there was already a lot of talk about additional legal action, and the buck does not stop here. So, yes, I think it is going to continue. The fight is going to continue. It's not going to go down easy, but your position, Jack, kind of goes against the usual conservative position when it comes to this. That's probably why you were getting a lot of text messages.
Well, yeah, but like, I don't know, Ursula. I like kids. I guess maybe that's my biggest weak. You know, if you told me that it was going to go towards, I don't know, construction or something, I'd be very upset. If you told me it was going towards the general fund or pensions or whatever, right, I'd be up in arms about. If it goes to kids, then I go, oh man, I can't be mean about this. I gotta just, you know, I just like kids.
I was hoping for big steel salmon along the highways. You know, like, I love big steel salmon art along the freeways. I wish all my tax dollars went to that.
Ursula, thank you so much for dropping by.
Well,
I appreciate
it. Thank you for inviting me. And I would love to have both of you on our show.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Absolutely.
Spike would be happy to do it anytime.
Anytime. I told her that, man. I'll work a double. Let's go, man. You know me.
All right. You can listen to Ursula Royteen every day, 9 to noon here on Cairo Radio. We'll take a really quick break, and when we get back, I'm going to explain to Spike why he needs to go to Pilates with me when we get back.
Oh, my God.
Right after this. All right. Hey, those are my boys. There you go, Andrew. There's a little Strawberry Girls for you. Spike, you know that every morning before we have the pre-show meeting, I go and I have to do my workout. Now, normally that's yoga, and for those of you who don't know, I do hot yoga. So it's a room that's heated to about 104 or 106 degrees, and you're in there for an hour, and you stretch a whole lot, and you lose a lot of water weight, and then you feel really good, and it's very, very difficult, and I like it a lot. But on Tuesdays, Spike, you and Chris both know this, I go to Pilates. Now, Pilates, according to this article from the Wall Street Journal, is growing in popularity amongst men, which is interesting because generally when I go to Pilates, I'm the only dude there, and I'm surrounded by ladies, I want to say in the neighborhood of maybe mid-20s to mid-60s, and they are all in better shape than I will ever be in my life.
Wow.
They are all in phenomenal shape. So Pilates is basically like yoga, but it's this idea that you're not focusing on the what do you want to call it, the more aesthetic parts of, you know, you're not focusing
on the gym rat stuff. It's not, you know, doing squats and bench press and curls.
Right.
It's not barbell work.
No, it's like body weight exercises that are miserable and they're really difficult. And if you do work out with weights, they're like 3 or 4 pound weights max. And most people would say 3 or 4 pound weights, what's that going to do? So it's a lot of isometrics. So you're just holding the weights and sweating and kind of twisting them around in different directions. But it is the most difficult thing that I do is Pilates on Tuesday. And you guys know in the pre-show meeting, I'm basically dead.
Yeah,
I have no.
Yeah, you're kind of. I mean, it's like working with a drunk again, because you come in like you've been on an all night bender and you have no idea what's going on. But it's a healthy fog.
Right, it is a healthy fog. So, Spike, I have to ask you this question: Why? Well, this article in talking about Pilates, basically, it's saying a bunch of dudes are doing it now.
Right.
The long and the short of it is that a lot of guys are figuring out that lifting weights and doing certain exercises isn't for every body type. That's what I figured out for myself, Spike, that I'm not really like a I'm never going to be lifting, doing clean and press and all that other stuff. It just doesn't work with me. My mental focus is much more oriented towards very difficult positions, holding those positions, moving to another position with my body. Okay. So I ask you, Spike O'Neill, you are a world-class athlete. I know that you're a triathlete.
Well, I was. I was. In my day.
So why aren't you working out, man? Why aren't you going every single day to hit the gym and, you know, I don't know, go running with Brian every morning when he does his 20-mile runs at 4 o'clock in the morning? Why aren't you out there?
My main form of exercise now, I have what's called a hot top regimen. It's where I get a cup of hot coffee and a top pot donut and read the newspaper. But that's not going to work for me, man. You know, that's not going to work for me. And I try to suck my gut in on the cameras since they got in here last week. I haven't exhaled in 7 days. But it's not going to work for me. I hit 60 this year, man, and I'm in the worst shape of my life.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy this hour, these 3 hours with you, this show, doing this with you. And they're not going to give me anything like any kind of secure contract if I don't show that I can live longer than 5 months. I got to show the boss that I've got some staying power. And I make this commitment to you, Jack Stein.
Yeah.
I will move daily. More than I have been. I'll move more today than yesterday, and not as much as tomorrow. For you, my friend.
Oh, thanks,
buddy. No, seriously, my mind is sharper when I'm more active.
Yeah.
You know, I know that I can think faster, talk better, and make complete sentence thingies. You know, all the things that are paramount to doing this show well. Now, my wife needs me. My daughters need me. And by God, Jack Stein, I think a little bit maybe even you need me.
That's true.
I need to be in better shape. And I just realized that Pilates, and when I'm thinking, oh my God, Pilates, great. Ballet exercising, that's what I need to do. No, Joseph Pilates was a World War I German boxer.
Yeah, he was.
A bare-chested, bare-knuckled German boxer who fought in World War I. And during an internment camp, set up a way for injured soldiers to recover and recondition themselves with like spring resistance. That's where Pilates was born. What's cooler than that? And then he came to America and brought this new way of looking at physical exercise rather than just lifting hundreds of pounds of dead weight, using resistance and springs to give better muscle tone, healthier, more even muscle tone from the whole body. So you don't walk around like some rips dingo. You know, I got a little muscle t-shirt and my big pecs are all flat. You know, nobody wants to see a 60-year-old guy trying to flex it up on Venice Beach. I'm never going to be that guy. But I could be healthier and live longer. That'd be great.
Well, what's amazing is that when you go to these classes, and this isn't a pitch for Pilates classes, I just do it myself, so I'm a big advocate of yoga and Pilates in general, is that you go in there and you see these like 60-year-old ladies, and they're these little teeny, they're maybe 5'4", you know what I mean? They're just so teeny tiny. And then they're doing like a side angle side plank, which is where your wrist or your arm is fully extended, and your body, you know, your feet are on the ground and your arm is fully extended, so you're basically in an L shape.
Yeah,
but
and
you know,
just
you're
hold
doing
it there,
and hold. And they hold it with such strength, and then they lift up the other arm so that they're doing a full kind of a T pose while they're on the ground, and then they bend the arm behind them and they grab a foot and they bring it around, so they're basically, it's the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life, and I'm there just sweating profusely, you know, just dripping. It looks like an unhealthy amount, you know what I mean, like
I
I'm
do.
A death row inmate
it.
Or something, like just unbelievable amounts, and they're just like a little bead just appears on this woman's temple, and she's like, oh, it's hot in here today, and I'm like, lady, what are you doing. So, and I'm on a ton of steroids, Spike, that's the other thing. I'm juiced to the
really?
Gill. Oh yeah, I'm on loads of steroids, man. And so when I'm in there, you know, I'm thinking like, I'm going to show up these ladies. I'm going to pick up the 5 pound weights while they're holding the two. I'm gassed. I can't do anything, Spike. You know, they've got the 2 pound weights and they're taking it over their head and I've got the 5 pound weights. I'm like, I gotta sit this one out. Gotta go into child's pose real quick.
Just well, I have to find some women who can shame me into moving better because I want to do this. Our band played last weekend, and somebody shot a video of it, and I swear, I look like
I look like Louis Anderson. I look like
we're going to send my all meatloaf review, where I sing and eat meatloaf for 2 hours. You know, I gotta find a better way.
Looking like meatloaf in like 76 when it was really bad.
I remember every little thing that should have happened only yesterday. And I sweat that much just walking on stage.
We'll take a really quick break when we get back. This is a really interesting article from the Wall Street Journal. It says that America's values are in decline. Find out why when we get back right after this.